Hey guys, welcome to the Tech Dive podcast. I'm Matt, and I'm here joined with a guest. How's it going, Dominic?
Pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good. So we have a couple topics today for our first episode. We have the PS5, lack thereof, stock, and what we've heard thus far with the stock with the PS5, and then also a little bit of old news: YouTube's raising its requirements for the partner program, otherwise known as monetization. We'll jump right into the YouTube raising the requirements for monetization. You want to elaborate a little bit on that, Dominic?
Yeah. So I guess first I'll just kind of introduce myself. So basically, I'm a small YouTuber that's just starting out. I kind of focus on outdoor community, I guess. So you like your hunting, your fishing, anything like that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I just, like I said, I'm a small YouTuber. I just started this channel probably a year and a half ago now. And with this news, when I did see it, I just thought at first, you know, it's going to be a lot harder for us smaller YouTubers to, I guess, gain that monetization since they did raise that subscriber count. So.
Oh, yeah. Previously, I do believe it was as low as, I believe, 200 subs or so to really get monetized. But now it's up to 10,000 lifetime views. And let's see, 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of watch time. So they're basically incentivizing YouTubers to basically make longer videos.
Okay. See, I guess I never really looked at it like that, I guess. Because you said before it was 200, correct?
Yeah, I believe it was around 200 subscribers to get partnered with YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, with that being raised to 1,000, I guess I see where they're coming from with having longer videos, but at the same time, I don't know if it really needed changing, but...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would assume from YouTube standpoint, they want as many videos clicked on so they can get more ads out, but I'm assuming maybe that's kind of what they were going for by extending the amount of watch hours so that you would make more videos. But instead, a lot of people are seeing it as, hey, I need to produce hour-long videos to get to that 4,000 hours of watch time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think especially starting out small, really when you don't know a lot about the platform, I guess, just because you're so new, it's kind of hard to understand all that. And I guess all the little bits and pieces that comes to making a YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's definitely gotten a lot more difficult. I know from my experience as a YouTuber, it's even with one of my channels that I've gotten 16,000 views, I don't have anywhere near 4,000 hours. And that was maybe a 10-minute video, which I feel is kind of the average for most YouTubers that they're aiming for, around 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of what I focus on mine. I think my shortest videos were like earlier when I started, and I didn't really think about getting that 10-minute mark. But now I definitely try to get at least 10 minutes. That way it just kind of fits that YouTube, what am I trying to say?
Algorithm.
The algorithm, yep.
Yep, absolutely. So. I mean, they've made it so difficult to really get your video out there and suggested. You got to meet so many requirements. You got to make sure you have the right tags if you really want to get noticed. I mean...
Yeah.
If you don't do that, you'd have to have nothing short of PewDiePie shouting you out.
Yeah, I think, as unfortunate as it may sound, a lot of hitting that algorithm is going to be based on putting in the right hashtags, the right title. You know, you have to hit that, I guess, what people want to see. So.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how other YouTubers that first started out even got recognized back then. I mean, it was definitely a lot easier back then than it is now, because it's definitely gotten a lot harder. But even back then, it was still pretty hard to really get noticed.
Yeah, I think a lot of it back then, obviously, was just because it was so new. The internet was still new back then, so people were so, I guess, maybe hyped to get on the internet and you know, watch videos and all these new things that were coming up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I still remember the days back whenever, you know, Call of Duty was the real big thing to record, and people were grabbing their grandmas and their mothers, basically tape recorders to record their gameplay on, you know, PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360.
Yeah. I think the first channel I really started watching a lot on YouTube and what got me into the platform, I guess, was Dude Perfect. I don't know if you know about them.
Yeah, Dude Perfect. Yep, I think everybody's heard of them.
I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure, but I don't know what they're at for subscriber count now. It's got to be close to at least 50. I think they're, I don't know, is it 50 or, I might be wrong.
You're talking about them right now or back then?
Right now.
Right now, yeah, they're pretty high up there. I think they might be at 50 million or something like that. I mean,
okay.
They're right up there with the top 100 YouTubers, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, but watching them grow over the years is crazy. They can hit the algorithm right, and they did it, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard not to click on the videos. I mean, you just see a short clip of them doing some ridiculous stunts that I feel like took 10,000 recordings to get that one shot.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
But,
something like that.
I mean, you got to be nothing short of amazing nowadays to even get noticed on YouTube. It's, gotten quite ridiculous. Nowadays, the only thing that really gets people out there is, like, just a few things. I mean, shout-outs, getting lucky, you know, getting that one video out there that really got you noticed. And then the third thing is being consistent. I mean, consistency is definitely
really
the
key,
number one way.
Yeah, that's been a hard thing for me, being just a small YouTuber and just starting out. Really, you have to... It's been hard for me to stay, I guess, motivated to keep that consistency, whether that's one video a week or two or maybe one video a month. You just got to find what's right for you, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely a little discouraging whenever you're trying to go out there, post a video, let's say, every week, and you're not getting as many views as you'd hope. But, I mean, the one thing that should keep you going is seeing your progression, going back through your channel, and you see all the videos you first posted compared to where you are now. You'll usually notice a higher quality in video, whether it being by new gear, but I really don't think that's the biggest motivation, but, you know, the quality of your video editing, of your, you know, content.
Yep. I often find myself going to my YouTube studio and just looking at all my past videos and the numbers on them, and... I know on YouTube Studio you can see like how the percentages on how each video did, like the analytics, so you can look at your view count, your minutes watched, and I think the most satisfying thing is seeing those little green arrows that say your count is up.
Oh yeah, that's definitely got to be encouraging, especially for new YouTubers. I mean, the one thing that really gets you motivated is people actually going out of the way to watch your video, especially if it's new viewers instead of subscribers.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's nice being discovered out there. I mean, I remember whenever I first got up one morning after, you know, it was like maybe a few months of posting my original video, and all of a sudden it shot up to, from, let's say, I don't know, it was somewhere around a couple hundred views like I normally get, and shot up to 16,000 views and like several different comments. I mean,
wow,
it was definitely motivating, but that was the one video that really shot up, and after that you never really saw those people come back. So it really depends on what kind of content you're driving out and which ones get noticed, because if it's just, for me, it was a tutorial video, and obviously my channel wasn't about tutorials, and that's what got me the views, but no one's gonna subscribe and stay to watch a tutorial channel.
Yeah, I think to do that, you have to be really built up your channel, I guess, and I guess developed that watch base for that particular thing.
Yep, definitely driving home the fact that you need to, you know, have either a persona or really something that's going on with your design of your YouTube channel. For example, you already have a good design going on as a Dominator Turbo, or also known as, what's your new channel name?
Currently it's Fishing with Turbo, but I am thinking about changing it to Turbo Outdoors. That way it kind of Yep. Gets Turbo all outdoors. Of the things that I do, because at first I started out just fishing, but obviously I've moved into, you know, your hunting and other things like that, so I kind of want to change my name that way it can encompass all of those things.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people would rather watch a channel that has a little bit of diversity rather than the same old content just repeated over. There's a little bit of refresher in there. I mean, kind of like how if you watch any Netflix series or any series out there, it doesn't matter what you watch it on, you'll see a little bit of a mix-up in the show to keep you interested.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps with the viewer count and the viewership.
So, yeah, I guess going back to that point where just seeing that your channel is growing, I know on one of my recent videos, I think I managed to hit that viewership really well, that algorithm. Gosh, I'm having a hard time figuring out that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're definitely hitting the right demographic, I feel like.
Yeah. I think one of my videos, one of my past two videos is up to almost 1,000 views, and that beat my previous one by about 500. So on that video, I just managed to hit it right, and it finally got 1,000 views. So that was cool to see.
Oh yeah, it's definitely got to be exciting to see that. I mean, going from 500 to like nearly 1,000, that's got to be motivating.
Yeah.
Especially whenever you're seeing it steadily going up from, you know, just a couple, you know, tens of people, and then you have 100, and then you're building up to close to 1,000. And once you get to the point where you're having thousands of viewers of video, then it's definitely got to be motivating once you get to that point, which I'm imagining is your next kind of goal for your demographic and target audience.
Yeah, I'm hoping to hopefully in the next couple months here hit 200 subs, and you know, just those little goals to set are definitely help I guess push you along the way and motivate you to keep doing it and keep grinding it out, because YouTube nowadays is definitely a grind. You can't just go into it and hoping to or expecting to make it big right away. You have to put in the years, the at least 2 to 3 years at least probably, to get a decent following.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't know how many of YouTube channels I've watched and seen them grow over the course of years. I mean, they went from just a very tiny channel to having a couple thousand people watching them, and then you just see them sprout up to 100,000 subscribers and tens of thousands of viewers of video. It's definitely a little discouraging that it takes that long, but at the same time, whenever you're hitting those little goals that you set for yourself, they really keep you motivated. You're like, hey, I need to get to that 1,000 mark for my subscriber.
Yep. Yeah, just seeing those other YouTubers grow as well just motivates you. Being someone that watches those other YouTubers, you're like, you know, someday I want to be like them. Maybe if that's only 1,000 followers or subscribers, but, you know, just those little goals will help get you there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can see all these YouTubers grind themselves up from a couple thousand to hundreds of thousands of subscribers, it definitely makes you think, well, if they can do it, why can't I? It's definitely like you can kind of analyze these channels that you've been watching for years, and you'll see that they just post daily or at least bi-weekly content where people are constantly coming back, making sure they watch it because they're that interested in that channel.
Yeah, for sure. I think you can learn a lot just from watching how other channels, I guess, how they run their channels maybe, just by how often they post. And a lot of it you will see watching is consistency and maybe trying to get on a consistent schedule. So maybe, you know, uploading every Monday or maybe every Friday, just something like that. Trying to keep that consistency, that way your viewers know, okay, it's Monday, so this person's going to be uploading. I'm going to go watch that video.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely, you know, a consistent schedule. I mean, if you take, for example, one of the most popular shows out there right now, The Mandalorian, people are sitting there waiting that day that they know it comes out and just watching that episode. It just keeps them motivated to come back and watch that. You got to make sure you leave them cliffhangers.
Yeah, that show, they did a great job doing that, and they've been doing a great job so far. Definitely keeping me interested. I know I'm not the only one, so.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely popular universally. I mean, if the baby Yoda memes aren't enough to tell you how popular it is, I mean, some people don't even know what the show is and know about baby Yoda.
Yep. Yeah. So what was I was gonna say was, I think a big thing nowadays with YouTube, with all these other social media platforms coming out, you know, your Instagram, your TikToks or whatever. I've never been a really huge TikTok fan, but
absolutely.
I think all of those platforms, if you can get a good following on any of those, such as Instagram or TikTok or even Twitter, you can really reach a lot more people than just doing your YouTube. I think Instagram and Twitter and TikTok all kind of flow into creating a big base within all of them. That way your YouTube can grow and every other one of your accounts can grow.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, any hardballing, you know, low count YouTuber out there is definitely driving home the advertisements on their Instagram, on their Snapchat. It doesn't matter what you got to post it on. It just is a matter if you're going to do it and take that next step to make sure you get more viewers, more subscribers, because it's not easy having new people find your channel. Sometimes you got to force it into other people's face, and hopefully they'll click on the link, and if they like what they see, they'll subscribe. That's the hope. Yep,
for sure. I know one thing I've noticed is it does feel like you're kind of pushing your videos onto people. Like maybe you feel like, you know, maybe they don't want to see this every day on my story or on my page, but really that's how you have to do it if you want people to see your videos on something besides YouTube.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, if people don't have that, people aren't subscribed, if people aren't clicking the notification bell, they're not going to know when you upload. So using those other platforms to, I guess, relay the information that you just posted a video or you have a new account or, a new channel, using that those other accounts, those other social media platforms to tell people that is definitely a very useful tool that I think everyone wanting to start a YouTube channel or wanting to start any type of, I guess, social media platform account, you have to use other types of social media to spread that word out. So I know, like for me on Snapchat, I'm sure a lot of other people that are starting out on YouTube, you can actually link your videos in your story. So it's simply a swipe up and they're on your video. And that goes for pretty much all the other ones. Especially Facebook, you can just put your link right in your post and people can view your video. So,
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a number of us out there that are kind of reluctant to post it on our Snapchats and our Instagrams and what have you. I get the withdrawal from doing that from most people, but sometimes you gotta do what's necessary to get your video out there. I mean, if people don't like your content, they can simply not click on it. They can simply unfollow you on Instagram. But as long as you're getting those target demographics onto your channel and hitting the subscribe button, I feel like it doesn't really matter. But I do agree with some people on some parts, like going into other people's YouTube channels and then, hey, check out my channel if you think this channel is cool. That's kind of, you know, trying to rip away their audience.
Yeah, I'm very against stuff like that, because I've watched a lot of channels myself that have been, I guess, victims, as you could say, to
poaching.
Many people doing that. Yep, and I just think that's just not the right way to do it. I think you're better off doing it in a more pure way, I guess, of, you know, maybe telling your friends and then they tell their friends, you know, so it just goes around and eventually that word will spread that you have your channel and maybe they'll go watch you.
Yep. I feel like a lot of the people that do click through to your link are people that understand they've at least tried to make a YouTube channel and they understand that it's hard to really get out there and actually have people clicking on it. I mean, whenever you're out there posting, you know, once a week or once a day, even for some people that go a little overboard, but it's definitely hard for us out there to really get known.
For sure.
I'll tell you what's really motivating and kept me going for a short while until I kind of had a creative burnout on my channel was getting partnered, because back then you only had to have 100 subs or so. It wasn't by YouTube, though. It was partnered by a third-party company. Mine was called Fullscreen, and I was with them for maybe a year or two, and basically, you get paid for your ad, and they, you know, you get the revenue for that, at least a portion of it, and nice. I only made maybe $100 out of it, and this is before I got the 16,000 views on my tutorial video. And that's definitely motivating for a lot of people as soon as they get partnered.
Yeah, I'm sure being that small of a YouTuber back then was really cool for you, because obviously nowadays things like that don't really ever happen unless you get lucky or you have that big subscriber base already. So.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely, well, whenever you see these smaller YouTubers out there that you've just seen posting nonstop and they have like sub 1,000, I mean, they're just grinding at it and they just aren't getting anywhere. Yeah. But you'll eventually see that they actually get that subscriber count. They're getting up there. I mean, I remember looking back at one of my old YouTube channels I used to watch, but I quit watching them because it wasn't, you know, interesting to me anymore. But he was only maybe a couple thousand, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and he was posting for a good couple of years, but now he's up to 50,000 subscribers, which is still nothing to scoff at. I mean, that's enough to fill a stadium.
Yeah, that's still, obviously, you know, like we said before, just those goals that you set for yourself, and, you know, it doesn't have to be a big goal, but just those little goals to get you through the way will definitely help.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the motto of the story. But moving on to the next topic, the PlayStation 5s that are nearly impossible to get your hands on. I mean, if you know a friend who's gotten your hands on them, I'm pretty sure you'd want to murder them by now for it.
Yeah, I don't think any of my friends have gotten the chance to get it. I know a lot of them want it, but obviously, as many of us may know that are gamers or even just on social media, I have found out that these PS5s are pretty hard to find right now. Yeah,
they're damn near impossible to find. I seen a Twitter post that I have pulled up right now that's confirming that Target has, or at least one down in Florida, has 12 PS5s just sitting in the back, and they're not allowed to sell them to any person. They're only released online. But the release date, they're saying, is sometime next week, and we're hoping that this is a restock and they're putting out more products so people can actually get their hands on them.
Yeah, that's something we would definitely hope, but obviously with these things, especially with this being such a hyped up console, and obviously it's the next generation PlayStation console, and
it's always a big deal. Help.
Yeah, that too. I'm sure with all the raw goods coming from China, and I guess the production of the PlayStations coming direct out of China, I feel like that's definitely a big contributor to the lack of PlayStations, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's nothing to be surprised of. I'm sure there are countless items out there that aren't even necessarily a hot item that are getting shorted. And PS5 doesn't help that it's one of the most popular consoles out right now. I mean, I believe the Xbox Series X and the Series S are having some issues, but not to the extent that PlayStation has been getting. As we know, one of our friends got the Xbox Series X, and from what I heard, he didn't really have an issue getting it.
Oh, yeah. Who was that?
That would be Garrett.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yep.
My boy Garrett. Yeah, I can't believe that the Xbox hasn't really had any issues, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there would be a little more hype considering from what people are saying and what the specifications are implying, is that it's the more powerful console, but not necessarily the more popular console.
Yeah, I think over the years, PlayStation has definitely, I don't want to say overpowered Xbox, because that's by no means what happened, but I think they've established their base a lot more than Xbox has.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that after Xbox 360 was dominating the PS3 back in the day, that PlayStation has definitely got their foot on the neck of Xbox, especially from a fame, or not really a fame, but just, you know, the hype around it. I mean, they've built up so much hype around the PS4, and they've gotten tons of sales on that, but the PS5 is definitely by far the most wanted and, you know, envied console of this generation, I'd say.
Yep. I think a lot of it, maybe not a lot of it, but some of it does come down to the exclusives, I guess. Yep. 'Cause you think about it, the Xbox really doesn't have as many as the PlayStation 5 does.
Yeah, if I'm being honest, I looked at some of the lineup for the Xbox. None of it was, you know, like, shooting at my face, like, hey, I really want to play that. I gotta go home and pick up an Xbox and buy that game. I mean, PlayStation 5 definitely had a number of titles that I was interested in that are PlayStation-only exclusives. You got the Spider-Man, Miles Morales, that's a PlayStation exclusive, and then you have Demon's Souls, which is kind of a niche category for some of us gamers, because I know a lot of people don't like the Dark Souls series, and this is kind of a precursor to their series, but it's definitely one of the games I'm most interested in.
Yeah, I've always been the first-person shooter type of person, so I've never really gotten into those other types of games, I guess, but especially with Call of Duty, I'm pretty sure PlayStation has the, I guess, the first rights at, like, what am I trying to say? I'm pretty sure they get, like, all the map packs and everything first, if I'm correct.
Yep. That was a trend that got a lot of people back to Xbox whenever it was the 360 days, because I remember the majority of the reasons was that Xbox 360 was getting the map packs a month early, and that kind of made everyone switch over. Not to mention, I feel like 360 was the better console because we had the whole party chat, and PlayStation 3 at the time didn't have that. But moving forward to the Xbox One and PS4, I feel like a lot of people chose the PS4 because of the user interface. I mean, the Xbox user interface was super clunky. I believe the party chat, when it first was released on the Xbox One, was just super clunky. I mean, I couldn't even invite some of my friends even after I got it a year after the launch. And PlayStation 4 just had a lot more user-friendly interface that people could immediately know what they need to click on to get to something.
I think a lot of it was a lot of the thing with, I guess, what a certain person prefers or chooses to go out and buy on this go around, I guess, comes down to what they grew up playing. I'm someone that I got my first PlayStation, it was the PS2, and I guess playing that, and then I moved on, and I skipped the PS3, I never got that, and then I got the PS4, and the PS4, like you said, the interface on that is so well organized, and they did a great job with that home screen and just how it flows, I guess. And I think, because I actually have an Xbox One S, so I do prefer my PlayStation over my Xbox. I just don't like the Microsoft interface.
Yep. It's definitely a lot less appealing, a lot less interesting, and not to mention, I mean, they've done some updates over the years to make it a little, you know, more interesting and user-friendly, but it's, I feel like once the damage is done, they've kind of ruined their target audience that they were going for, because they've already, you know, had bad taste in their mouth for Xbox. But don't get me wrong, I love Xbox. I've always been an Xbox fanboy, per se, but I wouldn't say my loyalty lies with any specific console. I go with the console that's the better console, arguably. And I think, arguably, this time around, it's PlayStation once again with the PlayStation 5. I mean, I don't know about you, but just the way that the PlayStation 5 is designed and looks, just the aesthetic of the PlayStation 5.
It looks
5.
A lot more appealing than the Xbox.
Definitely. I mean, Xbox went for the black brick again, which isn't super I mean, in defense of them,
very good luck with that, the black box design.
Yeah, they definitely reinforced that. But with PlayStation 4, they've actually kind of done a similar design. I don't think they were too far off from another. I mean, the original Xbox was definitely looking like a big fat DVR, but the PS4 was like a skinny DVR, and then the Xbox One S came out, and it was a lot skinnier and a little more appealing, which I think a lot of people liked. But I feel like they had a huge flop with the Xbox One whenever they tried to drive it home as a pass-through for TV, so you can watch TV and game at the same time. I don't think anyone was...
No one really wants to do that, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think they really went through their R&D department, asking, hey, how many of you guys, count of hands, would like this in your Xbox? Like, this is the reason you would buy it.
Yeah, I think what people, or what these companies need to start doing, is, you know, asking their fan base, what do they want in the next console?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like they literally don't, you know, go through their marketing department. I mean, they literally pay people to do this, and they don't listen to them, I'd assume. I mean, I don't really know necessarily what's going on in there. I definitely don't have the inside knowledge, but... I mean, if they have any clue what's going on, they're definitely not listening at all, because what people want is a powerful console that can be clean, interesting, and play games. They just want to hop on there and play games. I mean, if you add on features that they would actually use, like maybe, you know, 4K recording so they can upload their gameplay, that would be interesting. I mean, PlayStation had that and Xbox had that, but there were more reasons to go to the PlayStation side, even for long time, you know, Xbox users like myself. I mean, I loved the Xbox 360, but the Xbox One definitely wasn't the ideal console for a lot of us people out there.
Yeah, I guess going back to that preference point, I know back here a few years ago, back when I was still in high school, I would have arguments with my friends, kind of had our different groups, I guess. We were all good friends, but, you know, there was the Xbox gamers, there was the PS4 gamers, and we just have heated arguments over which console was better. And I think it all comes down to personal preference. It's going to be what you like. Don't worry about what the other person is playing. And I think a lot of that now is a lot of these games are becoming cross-play, especially the new Call of Duties and stuff.
Yep, that was definitely so really a point I was going to bring up.
Yep, it doesn't matter what console you're on. As long as you like the console you have, Don't worry about whatever other people have. It's whatever you like.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, crossplay is literally getting expanded to literally most, if not all, the popular games out there. I mean, including Fortnite. Not really a huge Fortnite fan myself right now, but it's just another great example of all the different games that they're adding crossplay. Apex Legends. I believe I even saw a rumor somewhere that GTA 5 on the next-gen consoles is going to be crossplay. Minecraft, for example, is crossplay, one of the most popular games out there. I mean, everyone was switching to crossplay because they're kind of realizing now that it doesn't matter what console you choose, because either way, we're all still gamers just wanting to play the same game. I mean, the developers and the, you know, companies making these consoles only benefit from that, because they're going to be able to play with their friends. So it doesn't matter which console they choose. They're just going to go out and buy whatever they want. But then again, if they wanted to play with their friends, and if they did not do crossplay, they would have to buy that console to play with their friends, which could increase sales. But I feel like just a general increase of consoles in general would benefit the gaming community.
Yes, I think it's a big move on these developers on their ends of, because I know for a big portion of time, especially with Fortnite, the issue was actually Sony for the longest time. They did not want to let people cross play with Xbox, and I just think that's really dumb. Like, yes, I understand the marketing aspect and the fact that they want to keep their loyal PS4 owners, I guess, on their console, but I think for gaming in general, and as of a growing sport, I guess you could say, and a growing hobby, that it's better for the community as a whole to allow these games to be cross-play.
Yep, absolutely. The point I was gonna bring back around was that crossplay is only gonna benefit all the consoles. I mean, if you're trying to get people to buy your console by limiting who they can play with, you might get more sales, sure, but you could also be damaging your company because what if your Xbox saying, "Hey, no, you can't have crossplay with this game with PS4 players." They're gonna be like, "Okay, well maybe I should get the console that most people consider to be better, the PS4." They might switch over to that. That'll just negatively impact that company. It just depends on the situation, but in general, if you open up crossplay to all games, I think it'll be better for console players and PC players out there. I mean, I don't know anyone out there that doesn't want to play with their console friends and their PC
Yeah,
friends,
for
and
sure.
it's just going to drive up game sales. So, if anything,
Yep.
they should be placing their stocks and their money into the gaming companies, not the console themselves, but the developers for the games
Yeah,
that
for
people are going to
sure.
want to buy and play on multiple different consoles and PCs.
Yep. Yeah, like I mentioned, I just think it's the smarter move to, allow all these different, your consoles, your even on Fortnite, your mobile games, they were a lot for the longest time that I think they're still doing it, obviously, but you can actually play with mobile, which is crazy. I mean, you would have never thought something like that was going to be possible, 5 years ago.
Oh,
You'd
definitely
never
not.
think that, hey, I'm on my PS4, I'm going to play with my, 5-year-old brother on Fortnite, whatever it may be. But I just think that allowing that crossplay between your PC, your mobile, and your console, but more you're just your console PC especially. I just think that's going to be better for the gaming community as a whole.
Yep, absolutely. I think Fortnite, even though I'm not really enjoying Fortnite as of right now, they were
Yeah.
really smart in their marketing tactics by releasing it also on mobile. I mean, I cannot count how many times I've heard friends or family saying, "Hey, I just got, Fortnite on my phone," and then their little brothers and sisters are playing it on their phone and they're spending money on their skins. I mean, you don't necessarily just have to get them on your game, that's also going to encourage them to buy things on your
Yeah,
game.
I'm not sure how much I want to go into that Fortnite game right now. We could probably just save that for an episode in itself.
Oh, yeah,
But
that could be an entire topic by itself.
yeah, I'll just kind of quick rundown out of it. I loved that game, and I still do. I just don't play it anymore. I actually haven't gamed in a few months, but when that game came out, at first I was really skeptical about it just because it was the cartoony aspect, but
Oh, yeah.
as I heard a lot more about it, my friends told me to download it, this was 2 or 3 years ago now, which is crazy to think, but with that game, it's they did an amazing job at, attracting not just the typical teenagers, I guess, gaming, but adults, very young kids with that mobile aspect. And like you said, it's just that Fortnite did a great job of, I guess, connecting the whole community, which is what I really think is going to actually help gaming. And I think they're really the first ones to do that, where, they allowed every type of gamer to play with each other.
Yep, absolutely. I feel like they might have been the first people out there to really push home the point that it doesn't matter what you're playing on as long as you're playing together. I remember whenever Fortnite first came out, a lot of people were reluctant to play it. I was playing it back in the beta days before it was even officially announced. This was whenever
Yeah.
Fortnite, the original game, which was more of a story-driven game, announced a battle royale mode. And a lot of my friends and family were reluctant to play it, but whenever some of my family friends and even some of my friends' nephews started to look at the game, they were like, "Hey, this looks kind of dumb." And then I'm like, "Well, just try it real quick." And they played a couple
Yeah.
matches just to find out months later they downloaded it on their PlayStation 4 when it came out on beta for their PlayStation, and They were playing that game nonstop like I was. It was a ridiculously addictive game, but I feel like this game might be kind of like Minecraft, where people are going to play it nonstop for years to come, and then they're going to have a little bit of a burnout and then come back to it. Like right now, Minecraft is booming as much as it was back in 2012, whenever it was like originally one of the most popular games out there.
Yeah, for sure. I just think with Fortnite being such an impactful game, it's a great thing to happen, whether you like the game or not.
Yep, absolutely.
For the community, it just helped a lot immensely. So,
yeah. So I think the moral of the story for this episode is that more games out there should definitely include crossplay. I've even seen Xbox being pretty inclusive on their Twitter and their social media about people in the comments saying, I think I'm going to have to go with PlayStation, you know, this year round, because it seems like they're the console that all my friends are on. And they're like, we understand. Go ahead and buy a PlayStation 5. I think because they understand that more games now are going to become crossplay, and it doesn't matter what console, because they're still going to get their gamers on their games. Which I believe, you know, in the next upcoming years, that console exclusives might be a thing of the past. I think everything's going to be one big conglomerate.
Yep. Yep. Hopefully that's what we see. I'm hoping that they start to steer away from that exclusives standpoint, I guess, just because I feel like that's still going towards that separating the community, which I think is just bad for gaming in general. So they need to keep that consistency where, you know, you're on a game, you can play with any console, and that's going to be that.
Yep, absolutely. You could definitely see that a lot where's the point I was trying to bring here? I've lost my train of thought here.
We've talked about a lot, so.
Yeah, it happens a lot trying to go through all these topics, and it just goes in one ear out the other. But actually, I think that should be it for this episode. It's kind of running a little longer than we expected here.
yeah, that's good, though.
Yeah, that's definitely good. That means that it's good topics for us.
Yep, for sure.
All righty. I think we'll wrap it up here. Thank you guys for listening in. Definitely check out Dominic's channel if you want to plug them your link.
Yep. So on Instagram, you can just search Fishing with Turbo. Just put an underscore between each word. And then on YouTube, the easiest way to find me is youtube.com/Fishing with Turbo.
All righty. Well, thank you very much, Dominic. We'll see you guys on the next episode. Be sure to tune in for the next episode. Hopefully going to be uploading weekly at the very least.